Hello, it's John Alsop, and this is your Internet Marketing 5 a Day, back after a small break. Number one, it's the Stanford Web Credibility Guidelines again, and this is don't link to outside websites that are not credible. This is an old rule, really. Your reputation stands partly on some of the people that you link to. So if you link to someone, you are perhaps not legally or anything, but you are saying that they're worth visiting. And if their quality is low, that reflects on you. So rather like if a friend asks you for a recommendation for a builder, and you give them a recommendation and the builder turns out to do a poor job for them, that will reflect badly on you. So, same rules. Anita Roddick still just keeps amazing me. I keep working through the book and finding new stuff there. This one is the question, can you act responsibly if you are listed on the stock market? Oh, isn't that an enormous question? Is it possible for you to act responsibly if you're listed on the stock market? What Roddick's saying is, does the stock market force people to act badly? And what she responded with is this idea of the social audit. So this is the how do you treat your people, how do you handle the environment, those kind of things. How do you develop people? I don't know what else is in there, but those are the things that are in my head. But those are measures of the future and measures of social responsibility. And so in a great sense, if your employees are happy and they are being trained and you don't have a high staff turnover, that perhaps is a better indicator of the future success of your business, as is things like investment in R&D and product development and service development. They are probably better indicators of the future success of the business than anything that's in the financial stats, the P&L, the balance sheet and the rest of it. So the stock market should take account of those. So that was part of her argument about the short-sightedness of the stock market and how it should be taking into account other longer-term factors that play into the success or otherwise of a business. All good stuff. So that leads us to think, well, balance sheet, profit and loss, fine, but what are we doing for the future and what are we leaving behind us as we go? The next thing, I don't quite know, this is just a nice quote, I think, and it's just something to think about, because when you look at some very successful businesses, and the one that comes to mind is McDonald's, the idea of McDonald's, not that I'm a big supporter of them, but the idea is that wherever you go in the world, your McDonald's experience is essentially the same. Now, my parents like English food, and yet they travel around a lot. So they went, get this, my parents went to Italy, and because they didn't think they'd like Italian food, they went for the first time ever to McDonald's. Because they thought they could trust it. Because they thought, well, the McDonald's here will be the same as the McDonald's at home. So we're on safe ground. Never had a McDonald's before in their life. So that consistency argument, it will be the same, is really powerful. I play in bands, and sometimes people go, well, we'll try and entice people in by saying something mysterious. And I just don't think it motivates anyone to get off the sofa and walk to the local pub to see something that they don't know what it is. That doesn't, I don't think that works. So, again, it's about expectation and it's about imagining the experience, being able to imagine the experience in a concrete way as a motivator for getting up and actually experiencing it. So this quote is, "The gap between your customer's best experience of you and their worst experience of you is the gap your competitor will get through." So this is about consistency and always meeting, if not exceeding, expectations. But it's so it's about consistency. That's the story there. Next up, just an idea. I can't tell you much about it because it's in French, but it's a Parisian website that helps people connect with their neighbours. Well, I think that's awesome. It's a laudable aim. Looks great. And it just shows you that this social media marketplace, Facebook, Twitter, it's only recently that Pinterest kind of stormed in and ended up third most popular social media site. You know, the market is not done. It's not finished. There are more services to come, and that's a great example of another way of thinking about how to connect people. And the next thing, if you haven't seen it, just have a look for it. The school dinner blogger Martha Payne, who took photographs of her school dinners day in, day out, blogged them, and gave them a score out of 10. And quite quickly, she got a big following. I think Dad knows what he's doing, so I think there were, you know, there's certainly some help there. And eventually, I think it might have been the Daily Mail, said something that the local authority didn't like, and they banned her from photographing her school dinners. And predictably, the Twitter world exploded, and by the end of the day, the local authority had changed their mind and said, "All right, yeah, fine, go ahead. Where, you know, we are but a local council versus Twitter." So again, it's the, you know, the blogging in the first place and the Twitter defense. So it's the idea of social media being revolutionary, being a strong agent for change. But it was also about the wrong-footedness of the local authority, that, you know, that was banning her from taking photographs was never going to work. So, you know, we need to know how to deal with the masses when they come at you with pitchforks on Twitter. And we need to know how to deal with that kind of consequence, and to know how to avoid it. And most of the time it's about listening and engaging and not trying to lock things down or stop things happening. It's about dealing with what's out there. Okay, that's about it for today, and we will talk again tomorrow. Thank you very much and goodbye.